This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I'm your host for Yoga Birth Babies. And today we're going to pull back the curtain and talk about what to expect in the first week as a new parent and life with a newborn. I realize I haven't done enough service to this topic because I have a lot of students that come back after they've had their babies and they come back into yoga and they just say, wow, I had no idea what to expect. So let's remedy that. So I reached out to Mima Spadola. She and I spoke a couple years ago, actually 3 years ago, about what a postpartum doula is. And I knew that she would be the perfect person to help demystify the first week or so of new parenthood. So let me tell you a little bit about Mima. She is a DONA, that's Doulas of North America, trained and certified postpartum doula since 2006, a certified lactation counselor since 2010. The New York Times describes her as a modern Mary Poppins, a combination friend, teacher, and spirit guide. And she's truly gifted and so generous with her information and insight. I think you're really going to enjoy this. Also, before we get to that conversation, just a reminder about our 85-hour prenatal yoga teacher training. So we've gone through two this year so far, and we have a third one starting in just a few days in Washington, D.C. The New York one in the spring is almost full. So if you're a yoga teacher out there and you want to learn more about prenatal yoga, it's your passion, sign up soon. And then we're in Richmond, Virginia for the end of spring. I can't believe I'm already thinking end of spring as I see some flakes outside my window right now. So that's what's going on with our teacher training. Now, some people, they don't want to do a whole teacher training, but they just want to know what to do when a pregnant student walks into class and they need some support on that. All right, so what do? We have a course called Who's Afraid of the Pregnant Yogi? And you can check it out on our website, Who's Afraid of the Pregnant Yogi? And it just gives you some tools to help support the pregnant person when they come into your class. And then what if you're a pregnant person out there and you can't make it into the four walls of Prenatal Yoga Center? We have four online yoga classes that you can purchase for 2 months and do four different practices on your own at home when you're traveling, wherever that may be. Check that out on our site, prenatalyogacenter.com. And then lastly, if you haven't yet, please take a moment and leave a rating and review. It helps people find the podcast. I don't totally understand all the algorithms out there, but it does help people find us. I appreciate your time. I really do. So thank you so much for being part of our community. We're going to take a quick break and when we come back. Please enjoy my conversation with Mima. Calling all New York City parents. I want to tell you about the Manhattan Schoolhouse here in New York City. It's a Reggio Emilia-inspired daycare and preschool that welcomes children from 3 months to 5 years of age. Knowing and appreciating the busy lives of New York City families, Manhattan Schoolhouse's programs offer full-time, year-round childcare. Their program maintains a low teacher-child ratio that ensures each child gets the attention he or she needs. And the children are fed meals catered by companies that provide only high-quality, nutritious foods with locally sourced ingredients. The Manhattan Schoolhouse children engage in enriching daily activities such as yoga and dance, music classes, and lessons in foreign languages. Parents, children, and teachers work as partners to best support each child's developmental growth as an individual and a member of a community. They truly value relationships and believe that every interaction with each child matters. Manhattan Schoolhouse is currently located on the Upper East Side and has a new site opening on West 28th Street in the heart of Chelsea. To learn more about Manhattan Schoolhouse and schedule a tour, check out their website at www.manhattanschoolhouse.com. www.manhattanschoolhouse.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Mima, how are you today?
I am well, thank you. Happy New Year.
And
it's good to be back.
Yeah, I know. So 3 years ago in January, we did this whole thing before talking about your life as a postpartum doula, which will definitely relate to what we're going to talk about today. So thank you. Thanks for your time.
I'm happy to be with you.
Oh, great. So what I thought we'd talk about today, a lot of my students come up to me and this postpartum, not usually during pregnancy, unless it's their second or third. And there's usually a lot of buildup about pregnancy and a lot of preparation and classes and books and a lot of time with that and about the birth. And then postpartum hits. And a lot of times people just feel totally boggled by the experience. There wasn't a lot of focus on that from, you know, often care providers and maybe the research they're doing or whoever. And so they really feel kind of left behind. So I thought today we would dive into what that first week or so is like as a new parent, what the behavior in newborn's going to be, just really the true expectation. And as a postpartum doula, I know you have so much information. You're right there in the mud of it. So let's dive in. But I guess let's start with a little bit about you and the work you do and how you got into this.
Sure. So I started working as a postpartum doula almost 14 years ago in early 2006. Before that, I was a documentary filmmaker. I made documentaries about women's body issues, family stuff for HBO, for PBS. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about newborn babies and newborn parents. And then what happened was one of my closest friends had a baby, and everyone was very, very excited about it during the pregnancy. And immediately after her son was born, there was a lot of excitement, and then everybody disappeared. And what ended up happening for her was, without much support, she developed some pretty severe postpartum anxiety and depression. I got a call from her one day saying that she had made a call to a suicide hotline. She was feeling really frightened. I went with her to the ER. They handled it very badly and sent her right home. And then I got a call shortly after that in the middle of the night that she and her husband were back in a different ER and that she was being checked in inpatient psych for about a week. And I was totally shocked. Like, how could this happen? Where was the support? How could it be that we paid so much attention to, you know, someone who's pregnant and expressed such delight about the baby arriving, and then we all disappeared? I should have known better. And yet that is just kind of generally what we do in this culture. And I thought, God, there really should be someone who's there to support the parents after the birth of a baby. And what ended up happening actually was that my friend, as she began her recovery, she found out about postpartum doulas. She trained as a postpartum doula. She also trained to really support other parents going through postpartum depression, really focusing on PPD and anxiety. And really paid it forward and was an incredible support for many years of other parents. And she really inspired me to follow her and become a postpartum doula myself. And she's no longer doing that work, but it was really a part of her recovery and a total inspiration to me. And I, you know, even though my focus in the beginning was really on postpartum mood disorders, you know, I work with a range of people. So I'm not just focused on people who are in crisis. But I think what I think is important to understand is that whether or not you actually are suffering from a postpartum mood disorder, things are intense. Things are really intense. Even if you had an easy birth, even, you know, no matter how you're feeding the baby, if you're nursing or not, even if that's going easily, it is still a massive shift in your identity if it is your first baby, and an upheaval to your family if it's your second or, you know, third, fourth, fifth baby. It rocks your world. And I don't think we speak honestly enough about what it does to your body, what it does to your heart, what it does to your mind, what it does to your relationship if you have a partner. And we don't provide enough support. We really value being tough and doing it on your own. You're somehow seen as, you know, maybe weak. That's the thought. You're somehow seen as weak if you're asking for too much help, if you're leaning on people. When, of course, what I always say to my clients is, we were never meant to do this alone. Throughout history, that's not what we were doing. When we had babies way back in the day, we had our mothers and our aunties and our sisters around us taking care of us. And it should be no different now, but we're very isolated. So, you know, we don't necessarily have all of those family members around us. They might be busy. They might be far away. They might drive us up a wall. They might not still be alive. And so that's where I come in as a postpartum doula. I'm a non-medical support person. I am there to help navigate those early days, weeks, months with a newborn, to help educate, to support, to model how to care for yourself, how to care for your baby. I'm teaching without lecturing. I'm providing support without taking over. I'm helping soothe baby. I'm helping educate about sleep and normal sleep patterns or lack thereof. I'm helping with infant feeding, no matter what your choice is. I'm helping people understand what is going on with your body because, oh my God, some crazy stuff happens with your body after you have a baby, whether you've given birth vaginally or by cesarean. And just helping parents navigate, helping them gain in confidence. I always say to people, my job is to work myself out of a job. And I know that just sounds like a line, but it is so true. And it, like, nothing makes me happier when people, you know, I reach the end of my time with clients and they just say, like, we're going to miss you, but we really feel ready to do this on our own. To me, that's like, great. I did my job.
Absolutely. I had a postpartum doula for both my births. And wow, the first one especially, it was our lifeline. It really was like our midwife and doula left. We chose a home birth and we're like, okay, we have 3 hours until the postpartum doula is getting here. We just have to keep the baby alive. And yeah. It was, when she walked in, it was, I just felt like it was a gift. It's a true gift. In fact, I tell people that instead of getting baby clothes, which they outgrow or whatever, either food or chip in with some friends and get some postpartum doula time. It's so valuable. And so, a lot of people don't even know what a postpartum doula is. I think labor support doulas are more commonplace of understanding in our culture. Postpartum doulas, it's so important, but yet I don't think people really understand what they do. So let's get into, with your background of 14 years being right in that front line of the very beginning, I guess let's talk about that kind of nitty gritty time. So we're going to cover a lot, but I thought let's just go what you see, and this is kind of a broad stroke here. Just if it's a general recovery someone may think of when they have a vaginal birth. And I know I'll ask the same thing about a cesarean because I know they're mm-hmm. different, but just, I think some people don't even know, like I remember mentioning to students, they bleed for a while. They had no idea. So kind of paint a broad stroke of what general recovery looks like for vaginal birth.
Yeah, Yeah. So, I mean, there are definitely some similarities between vaginal and cesarean, but let's start with giving birth vaginally. I mean, there's obviously a huge range of what that can look like. You know, some people have minimal tearing, some people have really serious tearing. So depending on that, you can be feeling incredibly sore in your perineum and bottom. You might have hemorrhoids from extended pushing, or maybe during the pregnancy they developed. You might be feeling very constipated from, if you had an epidural, if there are certain kinds of epidurals that are going to be very constipating. If you had an IV, you're going to be feeling a lot of that extra fluid in your body, that edema in your breasts, in your ankles, in your feet, in your face. In any case, you're going to be sweating and urinating a lot as you get rid of a lot of retained fluids from the pregnancy. You are going to definitely be bleeding a lot, and the bleeding kind of can come and go. People can feel like really surprised by the amount of blood. If they're soaking more than a pad an hour, that's definitely like a sign to call your provider. But you know, there are big clots. If it's bigger than an egg, you call your provider, but otherwise you might see some big pieces of that uterine lining coming out. Your uterus is going to feel incredibly crampy. That's involution, that the uterus is returning to its pre-pregnancy size. And especially, you know, if you're nursing, when you nurse, you're going to be feeling pretty crampy. And that can be really surprising for people. They don't expect to feel pains that can feel surprisingly like labor. You might want to like put a hot water bottle on your abdomen, you know, deep breaths, whatever you were doing to kind of cope with some of those labor and contraction pains. You know, you need to drink lots of fluids. I mean, you're also going to be feeling incredibly thirsty. And so your body will kind of prompt you in that anyway.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
In terms of the care for the vaginal area, think about using cold for the first like 48 hours. So you might have heard of padsicles. That's where you take a giant menstrual pad and, you know, soak it with witch hazel. Some people will also put aloe vera on it and put that in the freezer. And then you put that right in your underwear, and feeling that cold can really be very soothing in the first 48 hours. But after that, it's better to use warmth. So you want to switch to like a warm sitz bath. So for the first 48 hours or so, it's fine to use ice and cold. So whether you're using padsicles, or some people will take witch hazel pads, stick them in the freezer or the refrigerator and put them directly in their underwear, that can be very soothing. After 48 hours, you really want to switch over to warmth. And the best thing that you can do is use a sitz bath. It's that weird looking, it looks like a bedpan. Some of my clients leave it at the hospital because they don't know what it is. So I've taken to giving all of my clients a picture of a sitz bath. If you see this at the hospital, bring it home, because it's a real drag to go out and buy it. So it sits in the toilet. You fill it with warm water. You can put Epsom salts in it, like plain Epsom salts, or you can put an herbal mix in there. And then you just sit in it. And that warmth and the herbs or the Epsom salts can really aid in the healing.
I have a question about that. We did a bath, like my husband would clean the bathtub and then I'd fill it a little bit and just do the same. We had some sort of like herbal mix and I would just sit in there. Is that okay as long as the bathtub's super clean?
Yeah, the bathtub needs to be super clean, and it's really just up to your hips.
But it was delightful. I was by myself. I really enjoyed that, alone time.
Yeah. I mean, what I say to my clients is, like, think of this as a time for yourself. Think of this, you know, maybe you want to read a book, or maybe you want to look at your phone, or maybe you want to do a little meditation or whatever while you're sitting on the toilet soaking, you know, soaking your bottom. You know, we want to carve out as much time for just a little, you know, like self-care as possible. Like, I know that that is overused as a word these days, but it is incredibly necessary to make time to take good care of yourself, which I know that you can't do unless you're getting support, you know? So I think it's really easy to tell people, like, to, you know, shake our fingers and say, you've got to practice self-care. But then if we're not supporting people and making that possible, that's really hard to do. And then it's another thing that people feel guilty about. But anyway, the sitz bath, yeah, can really help with healing. And, you know, if you're giving birth in a hospital, they'll also give you a peri bottle. If you're giving birth at home, you might want to invest in a peri bottle. And that's just like a little squeeze bottle where you can put either your herbal mix in there, or warm water, or, you know, like even make some comfrey leaf tea and put that in the bottle. And anytime you're urinating, squeeze the bottle, so that can really help with the stinging sensation that you might feel otherwise. The other thing is that, you know, you can feel really constipated after the birth of a baby, and it's not going to feel so exciting to be pushing when you're trying to have a bowel movement. So you want to get ahead of that, again, by drinking fluids, maybe drinking prune juice, maybe eating prunes, but really, you know, sometimes you need to take Colace, which they'll give you at the hospital, but just making sure that you don't get constipated, because that's a really unpleasant situation to get into.
Oh, I know, especially if you pushed for a while and just like that feeling like, oh no, it feels like the baby's coming out again.
Yeah,
so you
absolutely
don't want that.
I mean, a lot of my clients, you know, will emerge from the bathroom with a sense of like, they'll very happily announce to me and their partner, I pooped, like, finally, you know. And you might need to, you know, take some toilet paper, wrap it around your hand, and like give yourself like a little counter pressure against your perineum as you're pushing that bowel movement out, so that you're not going to strain those stitches or, you know, any abrasions or, you know, tears that you have, because that doesn't feel good.
No, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because all that stuff, because I did want to talk about perineal tearing, because that happens so much. I think it's something that people don't even realize. I've had students, luckily not too many, have had some big tears, but I've had some students with big tears where they're then even uncomfortable to sit, and then they're ending up side-lying feeding and could barely sit. So I'm glad you mentioned some things to feel more comfortable about.
Right.
So,
and certainly, you know, you should feel free to like sit on a pillow or sit on a donut, or learn side-lying nursing or laid back nursing where you're really reclining. Any of those positions that take the pressure off your bottom will really help.
And then I also tell my students, if something really doesn't feel right, go back to your care provider. I've had someone that their stitches really were not holding everything together well, and they just didn't want to be a pain in the neck. And then it turned into an infection. It was a big deal, which I guess brings me into some warning signs. I actually had a student just 2 days after, this was last week, I've heard about this, 2 days after her baby was born, she was back in the hospital with preeclampsia, which is a big deal and not too common that this happens. But let's talk about some warning signs, like something's wrong, whether it's preeclampsia or something's not going well with healing of any place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, you know, it's important for me to say that as a postpartum doula, I am not a medical care provider, but I'm there in people's homes and I see stuff. And, you know, when I'm concerned, I am not going to hesitate to say, call your provider. And even if it's like I'm not sure, I always feel like it is so much better to call your provider than to miss something that's serious. And I have been there. I have seen situations where it was unclear, and I said, you know what, I'm not comfortable with this. Let's call the doctor. And I'm really glad I was there, because, you know, it turns out that there have been times when I happened to catch things that were really serious. So with preeclampsia, that is something that people don't understand, that that can happen to you postpartum. People believe that that is only something that can happen when you're pregnant, and that's not true. So a headache that doesn't get better with medication, or a headache with vision changes, nausea or vomiting, shortness of breath, those are big warning signs for preeclampsia postpartum. There's actually a mnemonic device, and I have a wonderful handout that I'm happy to share with you, that the letters spell post-birth. So I'm just going to run down those.
Yeah.
So pain in chest, that could be a signal of a blood clot or a heart problem. Obstructed breathing, shortness of breath, again, blood clot or a heart problem. Seizures, I mean, that is a late, you know, sign of eclampsia. Thoughts of hurting yourself or your baby, obviously a sign of severe postpartum mood disorder. Bleeding, soaking through a pad per hour, or blood clots the size of an egg or bigger. Incision that's not healing. That could be either your cesarean incision or any vaginal tearing. A red or swollen leg that's painful or warm to touch, that could be a blood clot. A temperature of 100.4 or higher, sign of infection. And again, a headache that doesn't get better even after taking meds, or a bad headache with vision changes, that's post-birth preeclampsia. But really, you know, what I say to any of my clients and their partners is, you know your body. If something doesn't feel right, please call your doctor. Yes, it is true that there are a lot of weird things that are happening. And, you know, oftentimes I'm normalizing, like, yes, this kind of soreness is something that a lot of people experience, but I am never going to discourage someone from calling their care provider. And any good care provider is going to understand that this is a big deal and that people will have questions, and they should be patient and kind and answer those questions and not be dismissive.
Oh, I love that you said that, because I do know so many times people be like, well, I don't want to bother the doctor. It's probably nothing. But what if it's not? That's the big thing. Like, what's that one call if you don't do it, what it could lead to? So I asked about kind of a general recovery from vaginal birth. Now, cesarean, while there'll be some things, it is major abdominal surgery, and things are going to be a little different. I personally have not had a cesarean, but I did have a hernia surgery, a pretty significant one. And I liken that in a sense to a cesarean, because it was my abdomen pretty much from my xiphoid process almost down to my pubis. And I remember the first time I had to sneeze, I was so scared. When I like pushed a pillow against my abdomen, I swear I felt like I was going to rip apart. So,
and that's what I tell my clients to do.
Oh, I knew that because that's what I tell
my clients. Sneezing, coughing, laughing. It's like, you know, don't tell your friend who has just had a cesarean lots of funny jokes. Like, just warn them. I am about to tell you a very funny joke.
Brace yourself.
Yeah, like, so, you need to be able to prepare. It's very painful.
So let's talk a little bit about the healing of a cesarean, because a third of our listeners might have had a cesarean or are planning to.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you say, this is major abdominal surgery. And generally speaking, when you have major abdominal surgery, you really get to rest. And you're not expected to be caring for another human being, mixed in with all of the intense emotions that you're feeling around caring for that new human being, and possibly some strong feelings that you're having about having the cesarean. Not saying that everyone's going to feel, you know, trauma around that or disappointment around that, but that might be a piece of what you're feeling. And I just want to say, if that is what you're feeling, that is legitimate and that is okay. And you should find someone who understands and listens and validates that and doesn't just say to you, the most important thing is a healthy baby and healthy mother. You need to recognize that we're also, you know, the person who's given birth is a piece of this, and you know, how they feel about how the birth went down is really important too. Mm-hmm. So that aside, physically, what's going on, you are definitely going to have a hard time moving in the beginning, but it is really, really important to move, to slowly walk. You're not going to feel like you can stand up straight. It will feel like you are going to split open if you stand up straight, but you need to try to stand up straight. You need to walk. It's going to be really painful trying to even just roll over in bed. So first draw up your legs one at a time so that your feet are flat on the bed. Make a bridge, lift your hips off the bed, pressing your feet, and then turn your body over so you're avoiding strain on the incision. Put your hands down and push up. Don't just try to sit up. Don't recruit those abdominal muscles for a while. Things like the car ride home from the hospital is going to be a painful experience. Every bump will hurt, so tell your driver to take it easy and slow. You are definitely going to be experiencing some very painful gas. You want to avoid carbonated and very cold drinks. You are definitely going to be, constipated from the medication that you're taking. As we discussed, it's painful to sneeze, laugh, or cough. You're going to press a pillow against your abdomen before you do any of that, if possible. Try to practice deep, slow breathing. You want to really believe the doctors and nurses when they tell you to take it easy and not lift heavy things. So don't lift anything heavier than your baby. Think about nursing positions. If you're nursing where your baby's not going to be, on or close to the incision, when you're burping your baby, you want to be careful about the baby not kicking you in the incision. Your underwear is going to be feeling uncomfortable, so you're going to want to get as many of the giant mesh underpants as possible.
Grab those from the hospital.
Yeah,
you're absolutely paying for them anyway. Throw them in your bag.
People always say, they're stealing stuff from the hospital. You're not stealing stuff from the hospital. It is there for you. So ask for it, take it. You should not have to buy additional mesh underpants. You should not have to buy anything additional, the stuff that they're giving you in the hospital. Just ask for as much of it as you think you'll need, and then even more than that. And I just want to say, for people who've given birth either by cesarean or vaginally, think about working with a physical therapist. Not immediately, but, after you see your care provider for your 6 week, or, hopefully they're going to see you earlier than 6 weeks. ACOG is saying to do that now, to be seen earlier. But at some point, talk to your care provider about a referral to a physical therapist who really focuses on pelvic floor issues. Whether you've given birth vaginally or by cesarean, that is a big surprise, I think, for many people. They might have heard about this, but think of it only for vaginal birth. But no, it is also really helpful if you've given birth by cesarean. It really can aid in terms of, reducing adhesions from the scar tissue and just strengthening your pelvic floor and, really helping down the road with incontinence and sexual function and just sort of generally how you're feeling.
I think that actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think a lot of people are surprised. They'll be like, well, I had a cesarean, I'm sure my pelvic floor is fine. But then we remind them, they still had to open up your abdomen. It wasn't like those muscles got disturbed by the cesarean, and it's all the kind of the core is so connected, the abdomen, the pelvic floor, the fascia. So I am glad that you mentioned that. And also even if they don't feel anything, there was all that weight and the hormones, change things on the pelvic floor. But I mean, they are cutting the fascia. So that is going to change things. So thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, I think sometimes people are very focused on just the external scar. Well, yes, on the vagina, but also in terms of a cesarean, they look at the external scar. And if that looks good, they're like, I healed well. And they are not thinking about the layers
on the inside. Yeah.
Right. They are so about that external scar. And of course, obviously, if immediately postpartum, you see that it's gapping, you see that there's pus, you see that there's a, if there's a foul smell, if you have a fever, all
red
of that's
and a, hot
yes,
and oozing.
Looking at that incision is going to tell you a lot. But just the fact that it looked like it healed doesn't tell you what's going on in the layers below. And that's where a good pelvic floor therapist can really help. And it doesn't, maybe you're not ready to do that 6 weeks postpartum or 3 months postpartum, anytime.
Absolutely.
Postpartum. You're still postpartum. You can go and get that help.
Okay, so I wanted to talk a bit about the birth high and then the sudden shift of hormones and what that does. I remember as a person that has birthed and also as some as a labor support doula who's visited people after, that is so pronounced. They're on this high, everything's exciting, and then there's like, that's many people, is kind of a crash.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I think it is also true that there are a number of people who are feeling pretty beaten up by how the birth went. Mm-hmm. So not everyone is necessarily feeling that joyful high.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily joy. I think it's sometimes energy. It's just change. And...
yeah. I guess I just want to sort of normalize for the folks who are just like, gee, I'm feeling pretty beaten up by this whole thing.
Yes. Thank you for clarifying.
But yes, you are getting, you know, like a turbocharge assist from your hormones, you know, like thank goodness, because you've just done this physically incredibly intense thing. You know, like a human being who didn't have those hormones would just crash really hard. So at least you've got these post-birth hormones that are, you know, kind of keeping you going for a while. Around day 3 to 5, you're going to feel a giant hormonal shift. This is around the time that your mature milk is really increasing and or sometimes people will say your milk is coming in, which we can talk about that later. Mm-hmm. I avoid the phrase milk coming in because it makes it sound like there wasn't anything there before. But around day 3 to day 5, you're going to feel this giant hormonal shift and you're going to feel very emotional and it can be changing rapidly. So one moment you're weeping with joy and feeling just like everything is quite beautiful. And then the next moment you just feel like super angry and biting off your partner's head or snapping at the people you love who are around you. You know, I have learned that I absolutely do not take it personally if people are cranky with me in those early days. You know, it's just a very destabilizing time. And I think, you know, in the first 6 weeks of life, you're going to be still feeling a pretty potent mix of hormones that can make you feel out of whack. And what I will often tell my clients is, you know, like, try to accept that there might be a time each day where you're going to feel off kilter, that you might feel sad, you might feel weepy, you might feel anxious. But if that's not your experience, you know, during the 24 hours, you are also feeling joy during the day. You're laughing about the stuff that you, you know, used to laugh about. You're feeling excited about something. You're feeling connected to your new baby. Then that's a sign that, you know, you're doing okay. So, you know, making room for those hard feelings, I think, is really important. But also being aware when it crosses a line from normal hard feelings to, you know, maybe a sign of postpartum mood disorder, anxiety, or depression.
Do you tell your clients to have on call either a support group or a therapist or just some, like, if things really are looking challenging, the ER, or when the hormones are beyond your typical fluctuations, how do you prepare people for that?
Yeah, so part of my work is connecting with people ideally prenatally. I mean, yes, absolutely. I get calls from people after the birth of a baby where they're like, oh, okay, this is harder than we thought. Like now we really do need postpartum support. And so sometimes if I'm available, I'm happy to step in and help folks. But usually I'm connecting with people prenatally and we have a conversation about postpartum mood disorders. I ask them about their history. You know, it's not necessarily a predictor that you're going to, you know, develop a postpartum mood disorder if you have a history, because sometimes those folks are best prepared and know best how to manage. And they also have a, you know, a support team in place already and really know what calls to make if they're feeling hard feelings. But, you know, ranging from, you know, Postpartum Support International has an amazing hotline that is available free of charge, and you can call and talk to, you know, people who really get it. And but I also have numerous referrals for groups, for therapists, for psychiatrists, And any postpartum doula you work with should have those kinds of referrals. Here in New York City, we have the Motherhood Center, which is an incredible resource. And even if you're not able to use their resources, I know that they are able to share resources with people who are in crisis. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. If those hard feelings are intrusive and they are really getting in the way of connecting with your baby, then it's worth really reaching out and getting help. And I think what is often surprising to people is that the help is available, not only that it's available, but you really can feel better sooner than you might think. I think sometimes people are just overwhelmed by the task of reaching out, and or they're afraid, what if I have to take medication? Does that mean I can't keep nursing? There are medications that are compatible with nursing. There are wonderful resources out there for, people no matter their financial situation. So I wish more people were open to getting the help that's out there, because a lot of people are suffering.
We want to try to support that. So thank you. Now, the fluctuation of hormones is definitely something I've had a lot of people come back and be like, wow, that took me by surprise. So I'm glad we addressed that. The other thing, I'm kind of hitting the greatest hits of areas that people are like, that also surprised me. So let's talk about the realistic picture of how much sleep a new parent gets in the first week and how much sleep a baby needs.
Yeah. So in the first couple of weeks, babies are relatively sleepy, and they are going to be sleeping a lot. However, that sleep is broken into very small chunks at times, and you don't know how long they're going to sleep. And you're likely mixing in a lot of anxiety around how often they're feeding. And you might have been told, that you need to be waking them up. You might also be dealing with visitors who want to be coming to your home, during the day when babies are more likely to be really drowsy and sleeping for longer stretches. So what I would say is it is possible to get more sleep than you might think that you can get, but it's going to require a lot of work on your part. So for those daytime hours when your baby is really drowsy, just try to sleep as much as you possibly can. Think about the number of hours that you needed, I know sleep is disrupted during pregnancy. Think about before you were pregnant. How many hours did you need every night to feel like a happy human being? And that's the number of hours that you owe yourself. And so you need to just sort of keep napping until you reach that number of hours. Plus you're recovering from giving birth, and so you need some extra rest. Know that babies have that day-night reversal, and so they're going to be more active and up during the night. You might think about really wanting to swaddle at night to stretch the sleep as much as possible, maybe leave them unswaddled during the day. If you're doing this with a partner, try to tag team. So, if you're nursing, your partner's doing the diapering and the soothing and the swaddling and back to bed. Try not to have both of you necessarily up at the same time every single time. Try to carve out some time for naps when, visitors cannot come, or if they are really trusted people who can sit and hold the baby while you get some rest, that's great. But it's not social time. It's not time for people to come and chit-chat with you. Anyone who comes to your home should be bringing you food, should be doing your laundry, should be doing your dishes, should really be focused on taking care of the new parents.
I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things I wanted to ask was managing family and visitors. I had a hard time with it. I've heard many... Actually, I had someone ask just to do a podcast on that. So we're not going to do a whole podcast on that, but just... It's hard a lot, because as you mentioned in the beginning, a lot of us don't have family around. So people fly in, they're like, I put my effort in. I want to see this baby. I want to visit. And then sometimes they're the ones taking care. I remember having to get some guests, some food and drinks. We had a bris in our house. What was it? 8 days later, it was It was not fun. So as we're talking about the sleep, can you also, and you mentioned the visitors, can you, how would you suggest to manage visitors and family?
Yeah. So I think these are conversations that are really important to have prenatally. And if you cannot even have a conversation with the family member about this prenatally, that is probably a sign that things could be really tough if they come after your baby is there. And you're going to have to make some hard decisions about possibly limiting the amount of time that they stay or where they're staying. I think, you know, as best and with as much love and compassion as you can possibly approach the conversation, just to say, hey, you know, what I'm understanding is that I am really going to need a lot of rest and support myself. I need to be really careful about pushing myself, you know, and you can sort of put this, you know, you can say, my midwife told me, or my OB told me, or the pediatrician told us, you know, that we have to be really careful about having too many visitors. You know, so it's not just you, the new parent, demanding this, but to have a conversation saying, like, here are the things that we think would be most helpful. You know, like, we also need some time just for ourselves as a new family of three, or we as a family of four, or, you know, family of however many, just to have some quiet time for ourselves alone. Doing things like writing down a list. You know, what I say with my clients is, like, put a list up that says, like, if you want to help, ... please, you know, like, and then you've got your list of things, you know, and maybe it's taking the dog for a walk or playing with the dog, or it might be holding the baby while, you know, we take a shower. But oftentimes it's more like, please take care of all of the stuff that's around us so we can just feel supported. And yes, sometimes we want to hand you the baby, but sometimes that's really not where new parents are at. They don't really want to, like, pass their baby off to a bunch of different people. They, you know, they just want to be taken care of. They just want to have food brought to them, or, you know, get that mountain of dishes out of the sink. And, you know, sometimes they're in partners, you know, there can be like a good cop, bad cop. So, you know, someone needs to be a bit of a gatekeeper and just say, like, hey, you know, sorry, we're really limiting the number of visitors, you know.
As a doula, have you had to do that? Have you had to play a bad cop and be like, we totally want to see you, but right now is not a good time?
You know, I don't do that because, I mean, I always have conversations with my clients about sort of how best to manage. Sometimes clients will want me to kind of communicate something that they need to communicate to the parents, but it's more often around how to hold a baby or how to bottle feed a baby or how to, you know, sort of different things around care. But I want to be super careful about not triangulating or, you know, I try to have my role to be, you know, very respectful,
right,
and very warm.
So stay with that scope. Do you ever prep the parents? Because I'm sure as 14 years of doing this, you've seen maybe a lot of unsolicited advice. Like, when so-and-so offers this advice, how do we graciously just nod and smile? Is that something that's ever come up?
I say graciously nod and smile.
I answered my own question.
Yeah. You really practice going, oh, interesting.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, yeah. And you don't even have to say thanks because you're like, no, thank you. But, oh, interesting. Huh.
I remember my mother one time told me, we're really careful with sugar in our family. My son really reacts to it. And we were away in Disney World. It was just the three of us, my mother, myself, and my son. And she's like, Deb, I really think you did him a disservice from not having enough sugar. He really doesn't know how to handle it. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's like one of those, like, oh, that's an interesting philosophy.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
Your brain goes up several pitches. You're like, oh, huh.
It's just one of those, like, that was the first time I felt how I have told my clients to handle things. It was most like, that is the most insane thing I've ever heard. So, yeah, so advice like that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. I mean, I remember actually prenatally meeting with the guy who was our pediatrician, And he was really wonderful about sort of talking about the dynamics of like the grandparents. And he was saying, you know, like they are used to being your primary family. And this is this new shift where your primary family is now going to be you three. And, you know, you kind of have to remember that they're kind of going through this giant shift themselves.
Huh, and I never thought of that.
Yeah. And it can feel, you know, they're getting something new and wonderful, and that's very joyful, but they're also feeling maybe pushed to the side.
Yeah, or replaced or something. That's a great thing to think about. My oldest is now 8, and I never really thought about how maybe my mom felt replaced, or I'm not that I'm trying to psychoanalyze, but I really, it is something to think about, that their role has shifted in a way. Wow, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
I'm going to shift.
I mean, so as I say, like when I am with clients and a grandmother or grandfather is there, even if, you know, we don't really need to have the information, I love to sort of say, oh, and what did you do? And what worked, you know? And sometimes they come up with like amazing information, or, you know, like they teach me wonderful things. But oftentimes they're feeling so challenged by the fact that maybe, you know, they didn't nurse and now they're feeling defensive about that, or they always put babies to sleep on their stomachs and everything was fine, or they did it this way and everything was fine. And now they're just feeling like really kind of out of sorts, like, wait, so you're telling me that everything I did was wrong?
Yeah, so that's a great point.
Welcome them in and be like, hey, tell me about your expertise.
That's a great point. I'm going to shift gears one more time because I had so many things I want to ask you. Let's talk breast chest feeding. So one of the things I remember, my in-laws were like, the baby's not getting enough. The baby's not getting enough. And I kept saying like, they actually don't need that much in the beginning. So can you talk about how much a baby actually needs in the first week? Their bellies are so teeny tiny. And then I guess also to tell, how do you know if your baby is getting enough?
Yeah. So I teach a breastfeeding and newborn care class prenatally. And one of the things that I love doing in the class is I pull out a little marble, you know, just like think of the little marbles that you might have played with when you're a kid. And I hold it up and I say, what do you think the size of this marble is meant to represent? And people look kind of puzzled, and sometimes people will get it. It is the baby's stomach capacity on day one. And then I take out a bottle, and it's a bottle that's a small bottle. It's just 4 ounces. And I hold up the marble and I hold up the bottle. And sometimes I open up the bottle and I put the marble in, and it really makes the point. Everyone laughs. And I say, does this bottle look really huge to you? It probably didn't look huge to you, like if I had held it up 5 minutes ago. But now that you have this information, it's crazy big. A 4 ounce bottle is crazy big. Even, you know, parents sometimes get sent home with the like little ready-made bottles of formula. That's giant when it comes to, you know, the size of a newborn baby's stomach. So on day one, that stomach capacity is just about a teaspoon. And it increases day by day, you know, over the first 4 weeks as the baby grows. But even day three, it's still under an ounce. By day 10, it's about 2 to 3 ounces. So babies are very rapidly increasing the amount of milk that they're taking in. But you're absolutely right. They are satisfied with a very small amount of milk in the beginning. And that's partly why I would love to ban the phrase, you know, milk coming in, or I'm waiting for my milk to come in, or, oh, the baby's hungry because my milk hasn't come in yet. You've got milk in your breasts from about the midway point of your pregnancy. That's colostrum. It is the perfect newborn food. It's packed with, you know, it's the baby's first immunization. It lines and protects the baby's intestines. It is super laxative, and so it helps get that first poop out. It is the perfect newborn food. There is nothing wrong with it. And it is made in just the right quantities. And as it's transitioning to mature milk, milk, the quantity is increasing. Baby is bit by bit building your capacity. Babies are going to nurse 8 to 12 times in a 24-hour period. You have to remember that when a baby is in utero, they're on a constant feed. They never had discrete feeds. So this whole concept of having discrete feeds and or even feeling hungry for the first time is like very new for a newborn. So you're going to be looking for, you know, making sure the number of times in a day that the baby is feeding is on track. So at least 8 to 12 times in a 24-hour period. And a full feed is at least 10 minutes of active sucking where you're feeling that tug, tug, tug at the breast and you might see the ears wiggle. I love teaching my clients how to hear babies swallow at the breast. You got to get really quiet in the beginning and get your ear in close, but you're going to hear that little glottal stop, the little k- as the baby swallows the milk, and giving parents tools so they can see rather than feel this sort of mystery, like, I don't know if the baby's getting any milk or not. You know, I get that there's a real comfort in looking at a bottle and seeing, oh, there was 2 ounces in it, and now there's only a half ounce, therefore I know my baby got an ounce and a half. There are no lines on the side of your breast. You don't know. But giving people those tools helps them know that a baby's getting milk. And then you're also looking at what is coming out of your baby. So you're looking for, you know, in the first 4 days of life, like a pee and a poop per day. So day one, one pee and one poop, two pees, two poops, three pees, you know. And by day four, day five, you know, you're wanting to see, you know, 6+ wet diapers every day and at least 4 poopy diapers. But you're also looking at your baby and you're seeing that your baby goes through cycles where they're eager to feed, you know, they're excited to come to the breast, they're excited to nurse, and then they're milk drunk and they're satisfied, which is different from I'm excited to feed, you put me to the breast and I conk out in 30 seconds because I'm just warm and close to you. Also, cluster feeding is normal. It's not a sign that you're not making enough milk. So cluster feeding is when babies have a series of feeds in a row. I've actually taken to making a drawing for my clients, and it really is good at illustrating. And I'll describe it so you can sort of imagine it. I think people, when they imagine the way babies are going to feed, they picture like a string of beads that are the exact same size and they are evenly spaced across the 24-hour line. They're like, that's what a day of feeding is going to look like. 8 to 12 times in a 24-hour period means the baby feeds every 2 to 3 hours and it's going to be for X amount of time. And then I cross that out and I say, no, that's wrong, wrong, wrong. That's not what your baby is going to do likely. Yes, there is some baby out there somewhere who's doing that. But most babies are going to be, you know, like very unevenly spaced, and the size of their feeds is going to really vary from time to time. Babies are actual human beings. And in the same way that you and I sometimes want a big meal or a little snack, they're also going to do that. And so if we can understand that we look at the big picture and we're looking at our babies feeding over a period of 24 hours and not focusing on each individual feed, very soon you're going to start to see, like, either, yes, the feeding is on track. Yes, we're getting those pees and poops. Yes, my baby is gaining inability to nurse, to really do that active sucking. Oh, I'm starting to hear the swallows. I'm watching for those diapers. And of course you're seeing the pediatrician. Of course you're getting those weigh-ins. But weight isn't everything. And I will just add that I have had clients more than once go to the pediatrician's office and the weight is not what you think it's supposed to be. And then, oh, it turns out there was something wrong with the scale. So, you know, the scale isn't everything. You're really taking a big picture look when you're assessing if your baby is getting enough milk.
And I think that's so important about the big picture, because a new parent, again, there's so much anxiety around, are we doing this right? Is everything okay? And they can hyper-focus on each feed. And that's just going to create more anxiety, which we know is not good also for breastfeeding and for milk supply. So I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Because also, if someone is a particularly organized person and they want to see an organized kind of chart, that could create stress too. So great that you really focused on, let's step back and see, one feed might be smaller, one might be bigger. So thank you for bringing that to light. I think that can help a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, so many people, like here in New York City, are used to, you know, they're really good at their jobs. They're really good at taking care of business and getting stuff done.
That's exactly. And, very type A.
You cannot spreadsheet a baby. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work in that way.
I'm so glad you said what I was thinking. Like the very type A person, which I am, so I'm going to put myself out there. Want to see the even spreadsheet, and yeah, it's just a good reminder that they're little people, and they're going to have. So, thanks for reading my mind and really putting it out there in a way I wasn't going to. So, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask for one tip or piece of advice you'd like to offer new and expectant parents. We'll be right back. We are back. So we covered a lot. Is there anything that we didn't cover, or are you ready for your one tip or piece of advice?
I mean, I could keep talking about this forever, but I'm happy to give my one tip or piece of advice. And that is really simple, which is, I think everyone is really used to making a birth plan, or birth preferences is sort of a more accurate way, I think, of talking about it. But I don't think people really think about making a postpartum plan. And what I want to encourage every single person to do, whether they are giving birth or they are adopting or having a baby via surrogacy, is please sit down and make a postpartum plan. If you're doing this with a partner, do it together. If you're doing this on your own, you can do it on your own, or you can, with a trusted friend or family member, your special helper, sit down and write a postpartum plan together. I've written an essay about it. I link to it on my website, mimadoula.com. But you can also just Google postpartum plan and, you know, find a template for yourself. Just that act of thinking through these questions, you know, what do we need, thinking about who you might call on for help, even considering some of the things that you might be prompted to consider when you're writing a postpartum plan might be stuff that you just hadn't thought about. So I think, you know, it's not as if, you know, writing a birth plan makes your birth go the way you want it to go. And so writing a postpartum plan doesn't mean that you're going to control that postpartum experience, but you have a scaffolding there. And so you are ready for when things inevitably do go a little differently from the way you imagined they would go. And you do have support people you can turn to, and you do have, you have thought this through. I think that brings a tremendous amount of comfort. Personally, I hope that part of everyone's postpartum plan is, you know, a postpartum doula, or really compassionate, kind, and helpful people rather than visitors. And the one extra thing that I think that everyone should learn how to do is learn how to wear your baby in a sling or a wrap or, whatever baby carrier works best for you. That is an absolute sanity saver and is hands down, like, one of the most helpful things that I teach parents how to do.
I'm so glad you said that. With my second, I was able to wear her. With my first, honestly, my pelvic floor had such trauma. I couldn't put the weight of the baby on my body because my pelvic floor was so unstable. It was too much. So, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it is something that I missed, being able to do too much. I did a little bit, but when he got heavier, I just didn't have that support until I worked with, a PT. Now, there was one question I wrote down that I forgot. So I'm kind of going out of order, but this might help tie things up. You'd mentioned that sometimes you have parents calling you like, this wasn't what we're expecting. Or what would you say are some of the biggest surprises that new parents encounter that they just weren't expecting?
Well, I guess what I would say is sort of how out of control it can feel. That can just feel profoundly destabilizing to people. And I think it can feel really scary. And the lack of sleep can just make people feel totally out of whack. And so when I'm coming in the beginning, I think there's this sense of just like, oh God, everything feels very out of control. You know, nursing isn't going as easily as they thought it might go. They can't, you know, sort of get their baby to sleep when they want their baby to sleep. And it all just feels overwhelming.
I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that, because I think that there can be the out of control can make people, as you said, just feel so unstable. And to hear that that's normal may help people take a step back and be like, okay, I feel out of control, but this is part of the course, and we can get to the other side of that.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes sort of imagine like new parents, like on a little boat in the ocean, that's like, you know, these giant waves, and it's like, the giant waves are there. You cannot control those giant waves, but like, just keep pointing, you know, I don't know about sailing, so maybe this is actually not what you're supposed to do on in the ocean, but like, you know, on your little boat, you want to just kind of ride those waves as best you can, you know, like it feels intense. It can feel frightening, but you really will be okay.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, yes, it can feel like an emergency or it can feel like a crisis. But knowing that with a little support and with a little patience, both with your baby and with yourself and with your partner, you know, you will get through this. The seas will calm a little bit, until the next, you know,
big wave
challenge that you're going to experience. Because, you know, I always think like we never cease being postpartum, you know. There are so many stages down the road. I'm a parent of a 12-year-old now, and the seas feel very calm right now and wonderful. But I don't know what, you know, full-on adolescence will be like. Like, do they have postpartum doulas for those adolescent years? I don't know. Perhaps they should.
I like that. You just started a whole new career for some people. So where can people find your work? You mentioned your website.
Yeah. So my website is my name, Mima, M like Mary, double E, M like Mary, A, doula, doula.com. And I link to some articles that I've written that I think are helpful. And there's information about me and what a postpartum doula does. And I'm always happy to just have a chat with people on the phone about what their needs are. If I'm not the right person for them, I love connecting people with colleagues, making sure that people get the support they need, no matter, you know, where they are and what their needs are.
That is great. And I'll make sure I have that in the show notes. I want to thank you so much for your time and all your incredible wisdom and insight. I really appreciated this. I think new parents who are right before this or right in it will also get, or and support people will really learn a lot from you. So thank you for sharing your wisdom.
You're so welcome. I always love talking to you and I love your questions. So
thanks.
Let's do this again in 3 years.
Hopefully before then.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about visitors versus helpers.
I know. I have so many things. Like, I started taking notes of like offshoots that we're going to do. So we'll do it. I'll talk to you chat again. All right. Enjoy your day. Take care.
Thank you so much.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.